Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Gary Hines, founder and artistic director of the Druid Theatre, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
And congratulations on an epic 50 years of the Druid Theatre Company.
Hard to believe. It is for me.
And not looking a day, but you are here to talk to us about your life in five songs. But I want to start you with your childhood. I always associate you in my own mind with Galway, but yeah. you're actually a Rossi.
I'm a Rossi, yeah. I was born in Balladreen, County Roscommon, my mother's hometown. And we lived there till I was six. Then we went to Monaghan, my father's work. And then finally went to Galway, which was always the ambition when I was 12. But those 6 years in Roscommon, probably because I left before... I left before I got a real, any sort of a sort of grown up version of the plays. They're very much part of my.
And what conjures up in your mind when you think of those kind of those early days in Roscommon?
Oh, I mean, I think a lot of things. I think the landscape of the place, the flat landscape of Balladreen, the town itself, which, you know, is a sort of design town, and the people and the life there, a very strong sense of it in my mind.
So primary school then for you wasn't in Balladreen, you were Monaghan at that stage?
Yeah, Monaghan, yeah, to the Louis Convent Primary School in Monaghan. And then when we came to Galway, I was a day girl in the Dominicans.
It's interesting because it's your early childhood years that are informing your first choice of music. Not what I was expecting, but I suppose it's a theatrical in its own sense. You picked a song from Mass. Was it your early recollections in Mass?
No, it's. I don't think it's actually Mass. It's Benediction, which is theatrically much better ceremony than Mass. Sorry.
What's your recollection? Because it's Tantum Ergo Sacramentum,
which
you...
Yeah,
so what was it that brought you back to that theatre of the Benediction?
I've always loved Tantum Ergo. And I doubt you'll meet any Catholic, any girl who is educated of my age who doesn't know Tantum Ergo. Yeah. I mean, Marie Mullen and I would sing it to ourselves to enjoy ourselves. But I do very much remember... I think singing it in the choir, but certainly hearing it. I mean, part of a group of people together singing, although I have no voice whatsoever. And the richness, the spirit, the richness,
was
the formality of the ceremony.
Was it the sort of solemnity or the theatre of those rituals that...
Oh, yeah. I mean, those rituals, of course, affected me, yeah.
You've picked, I think, a recording by Donna Stewart of it. This is a first clip to ease us into the morning. This is Tanto Ergo Sacramentum.
Tantum Ergo Sacramentum, veneramur Cernum.
It's so soothing, actually, isn't it, just to listen
to that? Yeah, that's it. Hearing it with a single voice rather than choral, it gives it a sort of sense of purity.
Yeah, it really is pure. You moved to Galway for secondary school.
Yeah.
And what kind of a teenager were you? Look, I mean, was that when you first started to develop a flair for theatre, or where did you first encounter it?
No, I didn't. I remember my secondary school years as being pretty boring, actually, since I wasn't inclined towards sports, or other than avoiding a hockey ball shooting at my ankles rather than actually trying to meet it and hit it back. I was bored a lot of the time, and I was dying to get to university.
What were your interests? So, you know, was it more
reading?
Rather reading?
Yeah, reading, really. That's, you know, I just read all the time, and I have done since I was able to read.
When did you see your first play? Or was it at that time? Or
no, I saw my first play, and I do have a strong memory of it. I saw my first play in Monaghan, and it was a production of Many Young Men of 20 Say Goodbye by John B. King. And I still have a very, very strong image of those men singing that song. Just went, you know. So I was about 10 or 11 when I saw that.
Wow. And that stuck with you. Were you always interested in how people acted and reacted with each other? Were you an observer of people?
Yeah, I think I was. I wouldn't say I was an observer of people in terms of acting, but I was very, I realised I was very conscious of how people physically interacted. I loved, for instance, being sent to the butcher on a message because I loved watching them, you know, select the different knives to cut and move, and I just love the whole rhythm of it.
And the movement.
So, yeah. So it was less about the psychological reaction, really, and just about the sheer movement and choreography of it at the time. That I remember.
Your second choice is an artist, I think, who you first discovered at a disco in Salt Hill, Van Morrison.
Yes.
Because I think we do connect very much with those first kind of foundational musical experiences. Because your generation, of course, that would have been, he would have been one of the top stars at that time, or certainly emerging.
Well, I mean, like he, you know, I do remember when I first heard him, I don't know, 16, 17, 18, and I was at a disco in the Oslo Hotel, which will date me very heavily to a lot of Galwegians. And I was listening to Madame George. I was, you know, on the floor listening to Madame George, and I just was overwhelmed by it. Yeah. It was like a kick in the head. And I did something rather unusual for me, which is I ran up to the DJ, so to speak, and said, "Who's that?" And then I think, like all people of my age, Astral Weeks really became the soundtrack of our lives, and you know, it continues to be.
Yeah, and it's amazing the extent to which, in part through streaming and all of those other things, where these newer, younger generations are rediscovering.
Absolutely!
What you discovered, yeah, all those years ago. Your second choice, it is from that fabulous Astral Weeks. It is Ballerina.
Come on, fly wild, straight to my arms, oh little angel child, you know you're
It was so interesting, Gary Hines, just when that track came on, you nearly had a physical reaction. You'd been listening to it for the best part of 50 years. Where does it bring you back to?
It doesn't bring me back to anywhere. It brings me back to whatever. That's the brilliant thing about it. That it's a music that it's so familiar, it's in my bloodstream, and yet at the same time, every time I listen to it, it's like I'm hearing it in some way for the first time. Extraordinary.
Yeah, it is extraordinary. You were bored at school, but yeah, when you got to university, I think you joined everything except the crib. You threw yourself into student life. And one of them was the Drama Society.
Yeah.
Did you have aspirations to be an actor?
No, not at all. I mean, I absolutely knew I couldn't act. And in fact, when we went to the first meeting, they said, "Hands up those who want to act. Hands up those who want to direct." And I wasn't sure what directing was, but I knew I wouldn't act. So I went for directing.
Yeah, and you find an Irish play that is very kind of well known now as part of the was it Freels?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, we were originally given an English play, which I thought, I can't even begin to think of how to do this, but I was now kind of taken with the idea, so I went over to the library and I found Cass McGuire, and that grabbed my imagination, and off I went and cast an 18-year-old Marie Mullen as a 83 or whatever year old Cass McGuire.
And even something you've become so well renowned for, you'd quite even an innovation. And of course, Maureen Rowland went on to be one of your co-founders at Druid, but you didn't have the pretend fourth wall. You were obviously
no,
very innovative.
No, that's Freel.
Was that Endgame?
Oh, that's Freel. Yeah. That's Freel. That's how it's written.
Yeah.
And that's what really appealed to me when I saw it first. But the other thing I did do is talking about Van Morrison. I actually chose Astral Weeks, the track Astral Weeks, as the opening and closing music, which to me sounds so utterly ridiculous now. I didn't figure out that just because you love one thing and you love another thing, that they necessarily work together in the same moment. But I hope I've discovered that since.
You were quite prolific at university. How many plays did you direct there?
Once I joined Dramsock, that was it for the 4 years. Mm. So I would have directed at least one production a year. And then I was auditor of the Dramsock for a year. So I was involved in the running of the society itself. And
did you manage to find time for your degree in there somewhere?
very, very little time. I finally scraped a BA, and then I was doing the HDIP year. But while I did my obligatory teaching, I didn't attend any of the classes. And eventually, as the exams came up, I thought, there's no point in me even going in here. So I actually didn't sit them and waited for all hell to break loose later, which it did.
Tell me about some of the people you met at university. You mentioned Marie Mullen, obviously, but obviously Mick Lally as well. Around that time, you were meeting people who you'd go on to collaborate with.
Yeah, well, I mean, certainly I was. Mick Lally, not directly to the university, because Mick had graduated in a couple of years, and he was a teacher in Tuam. But you would meet him in the local, like the cellar bar and various pubs. So I didn't know him very well, but I did know him. Mick was a celebrity in Galway even then. And then, you know, all of the people, a lot of the people who were in the same year as me going through the college were the sort of founder members, if you like. While they didn't continue with the profession, they were very much part of making that first season in 75 and subsequent productions for a year or two afterwards.
Can I ask you about one aspect of your college years? You know, that rite of passage that is the J-1 visa, perhaps less so in the Trump years, but certainly a huge staple. And you were a very enthusiastic ticker-upper of the J-1 visa.
Oh, I was. I mean, you know, I got the first one, in fact, the summer before, just before I went into college, I think, or a year later. And I just fell, like, why wouldn't I? I fell in love with New York, everything about it. I was working as a file clerk, which meant stuffing envelopes, basically. And then I was going to everything at night. I was seeing what turns out to have been legendary off Broadway theatre at the time, and beginning to learn that theatre is not about stages that are moved, that you can make theatre in small rooms. And the people who were making the theatre were within my age range and so on. It was very different to what my experience of theatre, which was amateur theatre in Ireland. And really, it was the fusing of both that was part of the creation of Druid.
So it was a really formative experience for you.
Very, yeah.
You were going to listen to a song from that era. You've selected Roberta Flack singing Ewan McCall's classic, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. Let's have a listen.
The first time ever I saw your face, I thought the sun rose in your eyes.
Was that a little emotional for you, Gary Hines?
Absolutely. I mean, oh, to have perfect pitch, But when I was staying with my cousin, his wife, and two young sons, and I was on a sofa bed in the front room on Staten Island, and I had the that room had an uninterrupted view of Lower Manhattan, the Jersey Shore, Verrazano Bridge over the other side. And I watched over a period of years as the Twin Towers were topped out. It was just like magic.
A lot of people think so too. We're very proud of Gary Hines' success here in Ballardine. All the best to her for 2026. Another says, we're enjoying your interview with Gary Hines. We wish her and Druid every success in the next 50 years. That's from Mary in Galway. And of course, we're speaking to Gary Hines to mark the publication of a new book about the history of Druid by Patrick Lonergan. It's quite a beautiful book.
It's lovely. I mean, it's hard not to feel very proud of it. The detail that Patrick, you know, as a master of the productions over the 50 years, I mean, it's a lot of it is news to me, and also it's been beautifully published. And the range of photographs that's available. So,
and can you bring us back perhaps then to the launch of Druid? And it was very important because it was the first professional theatre company outside of...
Notionally.
Yeah.
You know, self-declared.
Self-declared. Well, you took that declaration and ran with it.
Yeah.
But the first professional theatre company outside of Dublin in the mid-70s. How daunting was that when you think back to, you know, the economic, you know, the socioeconomics of that time, or what did you start out with?
You're not thinking about that. No, you're 22, 23. I mean, you're thinking something as simple as we want to go on doing plays and something as kind of unreasonable as, and why do we have to go to Dublin to make plays? Why can't we make plays here in Galway, which is a place we passionately loved being? And that was central to the idea of Druid from the very beginning. And, you know, you're young, you have no obligations, you're enjoying life. You have that privilege of being able to do what you want if you can make it happen. And that's what we did. I don't think bravery came into it at all. Bravery came later, perhaps, but not then.
Did you ever think in those early years that you wouldn't make it? Like, I mean, at what point did it become...
Oh, for sure. I don't think we ever thought we would make it. From my point of view, it was a matter of trying to last as long as we could. And there was a particular period when we had to shut down a production just before one Christmas. And I felt, for the first time, I'm not sure we're going to get back to this, but we did actually.
How did you come about securing your own first, I suppose, venue?
Well, we were very lucky. We were using the Jazz Hall, and because it was in use as a hall during the day, the Jesuits kindly allowed us to rehearse during the night from 12 to 6 o'clock, which has a lot of its own tales. But then we decided that until we got a building that people could identify as ours, that we really needed that. So we actually managed to get a lease on a small function room in Dominic Street called the Forecastle. And that's, I think, where it started to kick in a serious way. And then subsequently, 2 years later, we got our current premises, Chapel Lane. And really, again, you know, that was so important towards stabilising not just the company itself in terms of the day-to-day, but to stabilising the idea of the company, both in our own heads and in the minds of our audience.
That period brings us to your next choice, which featured, because you love featuring music in your plays, but this featured in one of your world premieres of Tom Murphy's Ballaghangaira. Yeah. Why have you chosen this piece, which is so, so beautiful?
Well, Tom Murphy, like Brian Friel, used to include pieces of reference for classical music in a lot of his productions. I don't think Tom had written this into the original script, and I have a memory that we talked about it. But anyhow, we did, you know, and it was following Tom's lead in that. I mean, Tom listened to classical music music all the time. He had a radio on in his home 24 hours. And this, you know, this piece is completely built into the production of Balliol Gongora, which...
It is Schubert's Nocturne in E-flat. And as with the world premiere, we won't get to play it all, but we will play the first minute. So this is Schubert's Notturno. An extraordinary piece of music. Gary Hines, another huge career highlight for you is becoming the first female director to win a Tony Award. And that, of course, was for your work with Martin McDonagh, who we'll all know from The Banshees of Inisherin and In Bruges. But you first encountered and arguably discovered him as a young playwright.
Yeah. In fact, you know, I had left Druid and I spent 4 years away. And then I came back, supposedly for a short period of time. And the plays had come in some months earlier. And I read them and met him. And it started from there. So, you know, it was a very exciting time. It was, you know, a play clearly hit in Galway. And then we had... We were in co-production with the Royal Court Theatre. Stephen Daldry was artistic director there. And it moved immediately into the Royal Court and thence to the West End and then eventually to Broadway.
Yeah. And you locked him in quite early. You clearly saw that talent and wanted to...
I did. I had just come back to Druid and I famously optioned all three plays, not just one. And I remember the board who were probably wondering was it necessarily a brilliant idea to have me back in the first place? and now I don't know, I'm not sure about this. Luckily it worked out.
Can you tell us, because I know many people will be interested, what was it like to work with Mick Lally? What was he like as a man?
Mick?
Yes.
Oh, great. Mick was highly opinionated, fantastic fun. And a great actor. I mean, I think, you know, we, as I said, when we started rehearsing Playboy in that summer of 75 with him, myself and Marie Hardy knew him. And within weeks, I think we had become lifetime friends. It just worked. The chemistry between the three of us was instant.
And that's something that has to work in theatre, because you have to collaborate all the time unless you're out on your own. And I look at programmes like, you know, Safe to Create and everything that have come along, you know, in the light of the Me Too or Time's Up movements. Is it a fraught environment?
It shouldn't be a fraught environment. It's a tense environment because you're under a deadline. You're under public exposure. I often wonder why I eventually ended up having a lifetime job, which is the equivalent of sitting in the Leaving Cert 3 or 4 times a year. But the atmosphere has to respond to those kind of demands and yet at the same time be somewhere where people feel free enough to be open to be creative,
because
if possible.
By being creative, you're almost by definition being vulnerable. You have huge vulnerabilities.
Yes. So that's why I think saying, you know, Safe to Create is such an important central part to understand about the process.
Can I ask you, it's 50 years of Druid, and I'm just wondering, when you look back on those 5 decades, only what, 3 or 4 of which you were away from, look, are you planning for succession? Are you planning to give over? You're obviously still going at an incredible rate.
I just look back and think, I can't believe the privilege I've had of being 50 years. And it just does not happen in the theatre. And I am currently busy planning next year's work and hoping that it turns out the way I want to and the people we want and so on. And beyond that, at the age of 72, beyond that, I'm not thinking right at the moment.
I'm getting so many messages in from you, but one is, Dervil, all the best, my friend, since Roscommon and the early days of Druid, from your first widow queen, Mairead, op Bala.
Mairead Mignon, and of RTE.
Indeed. So, and lots of people saying, I went to Druid's recent production of Macbeth at the Gaiety with my 13-year-old grandnephew, and we both greatly enjoyed it. Congratulations on your 50th anniversary. I won't get through all of them, but what I did want to ask you about, is that this year has been a particularly difficult and challenging one for you,
yeah,
on a personal level, because your beloved wife Martha O'Neill, yeah, who was such a celebrated film and TV producer in her own right, who blazed a trail for women
in this industry,
yeah, she died, was it on Easter Sunday, after a brief illness?
A brief illness, yeah. I mean, she was diagnosed with cancer, particularly awful cancer diagnosis 5 months before, but even then, you know, it was terrible. And
did you think?
Yeah, I just missed her beyond words. But I think Marie Mullen said to me early on something that I've quite never forgot. She said, "Yes, it is very sad for you, Gary. It's also very sad for her to lose her lovely life." And I've always remembered that, because I think that's so true.
And there was a slight age gap between you. Was it 6 or 7 years?
7 years, yeah.
And I think you had said that you also thought that if anybody was going to go first.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because, you know, as I've said, I've told the story, you know, we never hung pictures. They were all stacked on the floor. And I said, you know, I we've got to hang them. I don't want you to be going around doing an emergency job for my wake. But obviously the planning was always about her burying me. Certainly never the other way around.
How has the loss changed your daily life? Because you're an incredibly busy person.
It has changed it out of all recognition. It is like having to learn to live again. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when I walk into a rehearsal room, I'm in an enclosed environment that I'm very familiar with. But going into that and leaving that to an environment that's without her, it's like a conversation interrupted in mid-sentence and it's gone.
She was a trailblazer in her own right. And,
yeah,
and I remember after she died, so many, particularly younger women in the profession,
yeah,
really paying tribute to, yeah, her generosity.
She was extraordinarily good at that. I mean, she's one of those people who sort of busted a ceiling herself. But once she did, she looked back down and helped all those other people to climb up as well. And I know, because I saw the detail of her days. She spent, you know, so much time just answering a call when somebody asked, would she talk to this group of people or that group of people, or taking part in programmes for development of young work and so on. She really was passionate about that.
Yeah. Mike, one of our listeners, says, what a joy to hear Gary sounding so good, yet knowing that she's still going through such sadness following the death of her much-loved wife, Martha. I'm also thinking today, Mike says, about her beautiful brother, Jerome, who was, of course, was hugely,
yeah,
involved in Druid. Well, I think appropriately enough, we're going to finish with a love song that was created in challenging times, but one that I suppose touches on that wider conflict and chaos in the wider world. Tell us why you chose Paul Brady's The Island.
I've always loved The Island. And in fact, it's one of those songs that constantly occupies some small space in my mind. I think, you know, it's something about the simplicity of his voice, the simplicity. I think there's only a piano and a guitar on it, and the story of it. Paul Brady has written brilliant music for such a long time. But The Island is one that just is always there for me.
It really is. As we said, a new fully illustrated history of Druid to mark its 50th anniversary, written by Professor Patrick Lonergan, is out now. I think it's published by Lilliput.
That's right.
Press. It's a beautiful book. Gary Hines, founder and artistic director of Druid, thank you so much for joining us today. And we're going to close out with your fifth and final choice, Paul Brady's The Island.
Thank you very much, Charlotte.
I want to take you to the island and trace your footprints in the sand. And in the evening, when the sun goes down, we'll make love to the sound of the ocean.
Text 51551. Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.